Welcome to the Colorado Concern Podcast. I'm your host, President and CEO of Colorado Concern, Mike Kopp. And joining me today are two guys that are doing a lot that has to do with innovation and growth here in the state of Colorado. Dave Britton, the general manager of Uber, Colorado and Utah, and Eric Matisic, who is the chief innovation officer of the state of Colorado, and he also wears other very cool hats. They're both with me in the studio today. I'm thrilled to have a conversation with them about the future of some very exciting things in the state of Colorado, not the least of which is a midnight beer run with nobody behind the wheel. But to start us out, Dave, you are Uber's general manager for Colorado and for Utah.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how Uber wound up in Colorado, how you wound up in Colorado. And I guess to let listeners know where we're headed with all of this, I'd like to know if Uber is a tech company or a transportation company.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me today. I think starting with the last question, Uber is absolutely a technology company that happens to operate in the transportation space. So, you know, if you look at the history of the company, it was started in 2008, operated in San Francisco in its origin, came to Colorado in 2012. Initially, it was focused on the service known as Uber Black, which is the limousine service. In about 2014, we started operating UberX, which is peer-to-peer rideshare. And that's where the real sort of disruptive innovation began to take place.
Let me ask you, did you use Uber to get here today?
I did.
Do you always use Uber?
As much as I can. my first ride it was in Chicago in 2013. And at that ride was the magic trip for me. I fell in love with it and watched the company ever since then, and always looked for was watching the job board to see if there was a way that I could jump in and contribute to the company. And when the general manager spot for Colorado opened up, I had to put my hat in the ring. I grew up in Colorado. And so the idea to work for a company that's doing such great work to change mobility in the state that I grew up in was too good to be true.
Yeah, I was a member of the legislature, I believe, when the Uber bill, mm-hmm. I think we called it the Uber bill, came through. What year was that?
It was 2014.
2014. Okay. Well, I guess I was already out of the legislature at that time. Why Denver? What moved, you know, aside from the obvious fact that it's a mm-hmm. city of some obvious size, but were there any other appealing qualities about Denver?
Well, I think, yes, obviously density is a key component of it. So if you look at where the business had started, it was generally bigger cities. Denver was one of the earlier cities, and a lot of that is based on, the culture of innovation and the willingness to do new things here. And Colorado was the first state to pass legislation in support of transportation network companies, which is the type of company that Uber operates. You know, I think that's a testament to a lot of the work of some really forward thinkers around making sure that Colorado is positioned as a place to innovate and do business.
So that's a very good place now to bring Eric into the conversation. Eric, you are the Chief Innovation Officer of the state of Colorado. The first time that you and I met, you looked me over and you noticed that I had a GPS watch on, and your first question wasn't, you know, what do you do for a living and how are your kids? Tell me about your watch. That really struck me as a funny thing. You're clearly a tech guy through and through. Talk to us a little bit about the Chief Innovation Officer role in the state of Colorado. I want to lay a little bit of backdrop for the conversation that we'd like to have about where we're going innovation-wise, tech-wise, companies to facilitate the rise and expansion of companies like Uber and things like that. So it'll be important for people that are listening to know a little bit about the CIO job of the state. I'll bet you a lot of people don't know the job exists yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much for having us this morning. We really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you about technology and innovation, my favorite topics. So the Chief Innovation Officer role was created by Governor Hickenlooper in 2012. And it was really created around the launch of, at the time, the Colorado Innovation Network. And the thinking was how do we really start to look at entrepreneurship, ideas, talent, and capital in a unified way? And how do we really elevate Colorado's discussion around those topics and reputation as a state on the global stage? Mm-hmm. And Colorado Innovation Network was born. Ajay Menon was the first Chief Innovation Officer at CSU. And Mark Sirangelo followed in his footsteps and served in the role as the CEO of Sierra Nevada Space Corporation. And I was appointed in February. It's a terrific opportunity to work alongside the governor's team, specifically economic development around those topics. Mm-hmm. And the core goal is to really connect our research institutions and our 30 research labs in a discussion around innovation and really showcase the best of the things that are happening inside of those institutions and really reflect on what Colorado's doing here from an innovation perspective.
Can you dive in and give a quick example of any of the overlap between one of our research institutions and the national research labs?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when you look at space, for example, or probably even a better example would be InRail, our National Renewable Energies Lab. They have a really great project as it relates to innovation around clean energy. They've partnered with Cleantech Open, Wells Fargo, and launched an accelerator in the private sector, whereas as a national lab, they have access to, you know, their core research that they're doing in the renewable energy space. So by being able to take that federal lens, apply it to a private sector partnership, they're able to look into the companies that are developing the earliest technologies outside of the federal government and get a bird's eye view of what people are producing. And then they can, you know, apply that to some of their thinking as it relates to InRail. So that's a really good example of the partnership that we're seeing in the state between a federal lab, an incubator, and a private company like Wells Fargo. And it's just a terrific example of kind of the types of innovation we want to see in the state.
And how are entrepreneurs and business leaders in the state, in the private sector, how are they accessing the information, the learnings that's going on in that space?
So we operate a website, the Colorado Innovation Network. We host a series of conferences and events throughout the year, a large summit once a year to bring and convene everyone together. We're in the process of building a network between our federal lab leaders, our research institution leaders, and our private sector innovation leaders, so it's easy to connect. And that community is pretty robust. The Colorado Innovation Network today has, you know, over 2,000 members that are part of the network. So it's something that continually grows. And we just work really hard to put the relationships and connections together inside the state and outside the state to really elevate Colorado's brand around innovation.
And then you wear another hat.
I do. And so I serve as the executive director of a campus-wide initiative called Project Excite. I joined the university earlier this year and really excited to be back. I'm an alum of the great University of Denver. And DU has always been entrepreneurial and innovative in their 152-year history. And they've really, you know, through their new strategic plan, have put a lot of energy around making sure that all students, as they go through the institution, have access to contemporary problem-solving, design thinking, and skills around innovation and entrepreneurship. And so we're building a university-wide program to make sure that we can expose students to those skills of the future and make sure they're best prepped for the jobs that are created as we continue to innovate here in Colorado.
So, Dave, whenever I use an Uber, mm-hmm. which is frequently, I get in and I just like to engage with the driver. And it seems like a real key cultural aspect of Uber mm-hmm. that you have really kind of a more quality conversation yep. with them than you might with a cab driver. And it's not that cab drivers, you know, are different kinds of people or anything. There seems to be something appreciably different in the Uber community. And maybe that's the right word. Maybe it is a community. But the thing I'm always interested in is to talk to the Uber drivers, the men and women that have moved to Colorado, and this was their job. This is why they moved here. They mm-hmm. moved here, they got a car, and now they're living kind of the Colorado dream, and they're funding it through driving for Uber.
Yeah.
How often do you see this, and is this something that we can anticipate continuing?
Yeah, so I think one of the benefits of the platform is the flexibility of the opportunity. So people can look at it as a short-term stopgap as they may be transitioning, i.e., you know, if they just moved to the state. You know, some of my favorite interactions are with partner drivers that are students, and they use it, you know, they can drive in between classes and it helps fund their education. Also, you know, one of my favorite stories most recently was somebody who had relocated to be closer to their grandkids. They had some folks ping them for a ride, and they wanted to go up to Red Rocks. Got up to Red Rocks, and when he got up there, he realized he'd never been to Red Rocks. And so he just turned off the app and hung out at Red Rocks for about 30 minutes exploring. And, you know, that flexibility is something that, as you look at the way that the economy is going to start operating, that flexibility is something that people are going to value more and more. So
you definitely hear that, especially with the millennial yeah. generation, where yeah. they want sort of a seamless integration mm-hmm. between work, play, lifestyle, yeah. all those things.
Yeah, it doesn't fit as cleanly in a bucket as it used to. So I yeah. think this is a good testament to it. You know, going back to your reference about the conversations, one of the things that I love about working for this company is the way that it's technology bringing humanity together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really creates opportunities for you to interact with people who you might not normally come across, whether that be the partner driver that you're riding with. We have a product called Pool, which is ride sharing in its truest sense, where you can get in the car with another rider. And the interactions that come out of that, I think, are just fantastic. You hear some really good stories.
Eric, on the policy side, on the state policy side, Are there changes that the administration is considering as it relates to facilitating Uber and companies like Uber, I should add? Or are all the policy pieces more or less in place that we need now, and it's more a matter of widening our roadways and things like this just to accommodate for growth, what you might call sort of the old skill set versus, you know, some of these newer policy changes that we need to make to facilitate the rise of tech companies like Uber? What's the conversation inside the administration like about this?
I think that technology and innovation is always a topic of, you know, all things policy in and around the state of Colorado. I don't want to speak specifically of what's being planned for the spring, because I think everyone's still kind of really concepting kind of the core pieces that's going to be really important to the administration around that. But I would like to say that as it relates to what's happening inside the Capitol, the topics around security, autonomous vehicles, ride sharing, bandwidth, smart cities, these are going to be key topics that we're all going to be discussing.
And when you, let me interrupt for just a second. When you say spring, you're referring to the legislative session.
Correct.
Okay.
And these are going to be all topics that are going to be in Colorado at an increasing volume for sessions to come. And I think that, you know, keeping a close eye on, you know, the evolution of ride sharing and especially I think as we get even past ride sharing into autonomous vehicles, there's going to be a really, really keen interest because it provides efficiency. It provides access. It really changes mobility. I love the way that you talk about, you know, changes mobility for humanity. And it's really a humanitarian effort to really bring people together and bring through transportation, change their lives. I truly believe that's what's happening right now. And from a policy perspective, Colorado, I would love to note that in 2014, when that legislation was passed, Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, called that legislation the Colorado solution and went back inside the company and said, we need to look at what Colorado did and see if we can apply that to as many states as possible. And I think that's a really big head nod to the type of legislators and the governor that we have here in the state right now that looked at that in that section of time and said, we need to be first. We need to do something that's breakthrough. And that's the way we think about innovation. That's the way we think about those technologies. And so I would not be surprised if Colorado just continues to push on the forefront of trying to be first in a lot of those capacities, because we do have a legislature and an administration in the governor's office and the mayor's office that are really forward thinking about those policies.
It is absolutely wonderful when you see that you have a company like Uber that could be so disruptive, obviously, to any kind of status quo. And yet it was the forces of change and new thinking that were able to really prevail over probably the normal impulse, the policy impulses, the political impulses to force those on the out, keep those guys, these intruders, if you will, on the outside.
Well, I think, and one of the things that's going to be really interesting to watch as you get into more intersection of technology and legislation is how do you have legislation involved and make sure that the government is appropriately engaged, but also not creating limitations. If you think about how fast technology adapts and evolves, you could come up with something that you think is a bellwether that will be very durable, and then technology advances or something new comes up that is now that legislation is challenging. So being in a position where, you know, the legislation is focused on, you know, what are the problems that you're trying to solve, thinking about technology very broadly rather than being very exclusive or focused on a particular technological solution to the problem, because something will come up. And so I think that's going to be a very, very interesting challenge. I'm glad there's a lot of good people thinking about it.
I would also add in that context, I think the two most important things right now is that we educate our elected officials, the importance of technology and the nomenclature and vocabulary of technology. Because it's moving so fast, it's so critical that they understand the words, they understand the definitions, they understand the domains that we're talking about, because they're vast and they're ever-changing.
So they basically are establishing new categories of thought, essentially.
They are, and you can't expect our elected officials to be steeped in the domains that matter around security, autonomous vehicles, smart cities. They're very specific, but they're very important decisions. And so I think it's, you know, organizations like Colorado Concern, a huge effort, and I think it's a huge benefit could be to be, you know, one of those partners in helping educate our elected officials around those deep topics, because it'll impact policy. I'd say the second is that getting technology companies involved in the dialogue is really critical. When you look at our core policy organizations in the state of Colorado, the membership from deep technology organizations is not proportionate to the traditional service industries or other industries that drive a lot of the discussions in those industries or in those organizations. And so I think getting tech leaders of our key high growth tech firms involved in deep policy discussions and get them deeply engaged, it's going going to be critical going forward, because they can help demystify and communicate some of those legislative or policy-based changes. And they can do it in a way at an executive level that they could, you know, talk to people from across industries and make it really easy to understand. And so I think it's critical.
This is a good spot to get back to our midnight beer run, because what we're talking about is driverless vehicles that transported beer in Colorado, and it just happened a few days ago. Use the word demystify, but this is now happening. This is not just something from Buck Rogers. This is actually happening.
10 years ago, it was so far on the horizon. And then 5 years ago, it was, okay, maybe in 20 years. And now it's, okay, well, we actually just did it. Like, it was a very, very curated experience, but it's much closer.
And well, so, who wants to describe what happened?
Yeah, and I think
you like talking about beer, right?
I do love talking about beer, and especially as being the number one craft brewery state in the United States. Of course I do. I think that it's important, though. Dave brings up a really interesting point that when you look at even the evolutions around space travel, something like Elon Musk with SpaceX, what took the U.S. space program in 10-year intervals to launch rockets, he's done 3 times in the last 12 months. And so it's really compact. And so that brings us to an awesome achievement here in the state of Colorado, where an Uber-owned company, Otto, which is an autonomous semi-tractor trailer technology that is really working to make our major roadways safer for logistics and semi-tractor trailer transportation, partnered with Budweiser to transport 2 truckloads of Budweiser's finest from the Fort Collins Brewery to a delivery point in Colorado Springs. Happened in the wee hours of the night, 1 to 3 a.m., escorted by the Colorado State Patrol, and the driver of the semi-tractor trailer was sitting in the passenger seat or in the vehicle, but was not driving the vehicle. If you looked at the vehicle head-on, you would just see a semi-tractor trailer driving down I-25 without a driver in the driver's seat. So really awesome achievement.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. So made global news.
The driver have some kind of emergency escape pod?
Not an escape pod. I'm joking. But safety is such a paramount concern that everybody's heavily engaged in making sure that the system is driving as it should be. There's a lot of safety precautions in place. You know, huge commendation to CDOT and to everybody in the state of Colorado who helped make this happen. I think it's another feather in the hat for Colorado around trying to be really forward thinking and engaged in the future.
You know, to just highlight how, to your point, Eric, about how fast these changes are coming at us. I think 2 months ago we were having breakfast and one of you mentioned that Uber had just acquired this company, Otto, from San Francisco. Wasn't that about 2 months ago?
Yep, that would be interesting.
And 2 months later, you've got autonomous vehicles driving down the road in Colorado. I mean, it was really incredible. Now, where are we headed in terms of more passenger transportation and driverless autonomous vehicles? Where's that going?
I think what we saw with Otto is not too far behind. In Pittsburgh, Uber has already launched their autonomous vehicle program. They have a fleet of autonomous vehicles that are picking up riders at their pickup point and dropping them off, 100% computer and systems controlled.
Yeah.
And that's happening today. And that's happening in Pittsburgh. And I think you're going to see, as those pilots start to expand, they're going to go city by city. And it's not just going to be Uber. It's going to be a variety of companies that participate in that space. And you've got Google, who has an amazing autonomous vehicle program. And there's a whole fleet of folks in and around Tesla that are working on deep autonomous vehicle coordination with other vendors. So a lot of things are happening there. So I think in our cities, you're going to see that move really, really quickly. And those pilots are going to become reality in not, 10 years, but 3 to 5 years. You're going to see really, really rapid growth of that being reality in our cities.
I think just to jump in on the Pittsburgh, it's important to note, going back to the safety question, they are operating completely autonomously, but there's a safety driver and a scientist in the front seat. So those cars that are running in Pittsburgh are only carrying 2 passengers. So it's functioning technology, but there's still a long way to go before it's actually the Jetsons future that will exist.
So what's the conversation look like, though, in a company like Uber, maybe one of your competitor companies? Are they going to begin to own these vehicles now, these autonomous vehicles, and just dispatch them? Maybe I'm getting too much into kind of the deep secrets of a private company, but I can't help but wonder how that workforce, how the Uber workforce, which has been so transformational, how that Uber workforce will change. No doubt you'll adapt, but can you give us any hints about this?
I think probably not too many hints.
I tried.
Yeah, I think you'll see one of the interesting things is going to be is how different business models are applied in the context of the technology. And if you look at how all the different companies are approaching it, each of them are coming at it from a slightly different angle. And it's going to be fascinating to watch how it evolves. But yep. I think that the way that I look at it in terms of my, you know, my immediate responsibilities in the state of Colorado, we're going to be reliant on our driver partners for as long as I can see. I think you'll see it's going to be an and situation, not an or situation in terms of how everything evolves in the foreseeable future.
Brad Feld just had a really great piece on this, just kind of in the lieu of what happened with Time Warner and the AT&T acquisition, or vice versa, AT&T buying Time Warner. And the headline was Steve Case was right. And if you think about back to 2000, we knew that media was going to be the core communications platform in 2000. But the acquisition of AOL and Time Warner at the time, from a technology and from a acceptance perspective, was about 15 years before its time. And I think when you look at where we are with autonomous vehicles, right now, it's like that 1904 picture where in New York, where there's a street lined with horses and horse-drawn carriages, and you take that same picture in 1920, and all you see is one horse tied up and then a line full of cars. I think it's that time frame that's going to be somewhere between 10 to 15 years to have that real Jetsons experience. But we're at the tip of it.
That's a great snapshot.
And I think that as we watch these pilots happen, the millennials, the Generation X, the Generation Y, they're magnets to try that technology.
Yeah.
They want to try that technology. And so I think because of that, mm-hmm. you're going to see it grow faster than those resisting saying, is it safe?
Right.
If you're less than 35 years old, the idea of jumping in a car without a driver is completely okay. If you're over 40 years old, you're probably like, oh, it's not safe. Do they have a scientist in there? How does it work? Like, it's just a different mindset. And so I think as that group continues to engage in those types of vehicles and activity, you're going to see them just be magnetically drawn to trying it out.
Let me ask both of you this question. It's somewhat of an infrastructure question. Are we prepared in the state, in the city of Denver and in the other major cities, are we prepared in the state to facilitate these technologies? You know, I worry about basic things like having wide enough roadways, but that's not really what we're talking about here with the tech side of things. We're talking about bandwidth issues and kind of broader tech capacity issues around issues like cybersecurity. How are we positioned? How would you characterize that, Eric? And maybe you'd jump in, Dave, and say where you think we could improve what we're doing here as a state.
So I'd say a few things. I think number one is it relates to policy and legislative environment. I think that we have the right people, the right administration to really be progressive in this area. And it's a huge opportunity for us to win. We were runners up in the Department of Transportation Smart Cities grant earlier this year. Would have been a really big deal. You know, it's a $40 million grant that could have really impacted and catapulted our activity here in the city. Good news is all the work that we did around that project, we're applying and we're doing it. We're adding other opportunities to the mix to try to continue that discussion and dialogue in a really rapid way. Number one. Number two, I would say that when we look at all these things we're talking about, smart cities, autonomous vehicles, cities of the future, the number one asset we need to be thinking about is the access to bandwidth and network connectivity. Every one of these devices mm-hmm. has a connection point, has an IP address. And as they get one in volume and then two heavier content, video, audio, all types of other content that's being moved between point A and point B, it requires deep network infrastructure. So I think as a city and as a region, we have a really big opportunity to jump out in front by looking at policy and programs and opportunities that invest deeply in and around broadband, not just in our rural areas. I think rural areas are really important for the state of Colorado. But I also think as we look about being the smart cities of the future, our urban areas are going to be equally as important to be able to invest in as well. And then I think the third piece of that is balancing it with security. I mean, I think we've seen as early as last week, the largest denial of service attack in the history of the web brought down a third of the web for over 4 hours in an attack that was not defensible. We have really smart people in the Department of Homeland Security and NSA and Cyber Command and all these other great entities in the United States that are working to protect us from those types of activities. And then with all that horsepower, that botnet was still able to take down the internet. And so those are really big issues that we need to wrestle with. How do we continue to be progressive and innovative? How do we put enough bandwidth and infrastructure in to support the growth around these next generation activities, but also make sure we keep them really safe and secure for our citizens? All really important things to think through.
That was a fantastic answer, Eric.
So, Dave, Colorado, it appears it has been very accommodating mm-hmm. to Uber, and I think that we're all very pleased about that. Anything you see on the horizon that we ought to be working on?
I think
on the tech side or the infrastructure side.
Well, I think so. Eric's point around bandwidth is going to continue to be a focus as you look at just the amount of information that's going to be collected and leveraged to make the systems operate better. So, I think that's a really important point. the way that at least I like to think about infrastructure is that right now, the better thing that we can be doing is looking at how can we leverage the infrastructure that we do have more effectively. And so I'll reference the product we have with Uber Pool. You know, the idea behind that is if we can get into shared rides, then it's less about we should make more effective use of the cars that are on the road. And I think there's a lot of other companies that are focused on trying to solve the challenge similarly, where in places where we can go wider, maybe we do, but there's plenty of places where we can't go wider. When you start talking about downtown Denver, we need to use the asphalt and concrete that we do have more effectively. So that's a key focus for us.
Well, it's really exciting to be in a state like Colorado right now at a time such as this. You two are leading in such critical ways, and we're grateful for that. Thank you also for coming into the studio today. Dave Britton with Uber, Eric Matisik with the Governor's Office, the Chief Innovation Officer. Guys, I can't thank you enough. As things develop, maybe we can do this again.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
You're very, very welcome. Well, that does it for us on this edition of the Colorado Concern podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kopp, President and CEO of Colorado Concern. If you'd like more information about us, you can check us out at coloradoconcern.com.